I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast.
And I'm Tom Rennie. Here's what we've got in store for you this week.
Spurs are looking for a new manager after showing Harry Redknapp the door. We'll review a turbulent few days at White Hart Lane.
We'll also take a look back at a fascinating first half of Euro 2012.
And we'll catch up with the England fly half Toby Flood ahead of Saturday's second test against South Africa. Well, we'll start with the latest from White Hart Lane because, of course, Harry Redknapp sacked by Spurs after nearly 4 years in charge. Yeah. He says he would have gone regardless of whether they've qualified for the Champions League. Do you think that's the case?
No, I think that's absolute nonsense. If Tottenham didn't throw away that 10-point lead at the back end of the season, he would still be in charge, and of course they'd be third and in the Champions League. There was a few Spurs fans yesterday saying that was a sackable offence in itself, because a 10-point lead, when you've got the kind of squad Tottenham had, with what, 2.5, 3 months left to go in the season, was a massive, massive lead to blow. But at the end of the day, Spurs, as we said before, they were three players short of really finishing third or challenging for the Premier League title. They were suffering with injuries. He had to put Bale out of position, Modric out of position. You know, Lennon was injured for a long period of time. Adebayor stopped scoring. You know, there was no one of their calibre to replace them. That's why they didn't make it. And of course, Arsenal picked themselves up at the back end of the campaign as well. But I'm surprised by it. I'm disappointed as well, because you can bet your bottom dollar there will be another foreign manager coming in now, and we won't have an Englishman in charge of a Premier League top four club, which is going to be disappointing.
Well, it could be a foreigner in a way, because Everton's David Moyes is being linked with the role. He's done a decade's worth of excellent work at Everton on a limited budget. An extraordinary body of work, really. He's got to, you know, the FA Cup final. He's seen them finish, you know, above Liverpool this season, just gone. Would he be the right man for the job, do you think?
Well, it's not too dissimilar for me to when Harry first moved to Spurs. At the time, he was being linked with Newcastle as well. And everyone was like, well, he's a middle-of-the-road manager. He's, you know, eighth and down kind of manager. And that's what everyone kind of thinks about David Moyes. But if David Moyes had been given some financial backing at Everton, more than he has, you know, he bought, you know, Jelovic and Fellaini for big money, but there was only one big money signing per year, is often what they do. I think Everton could be in the position Tottenham are now. They're a couple of players short. They have been for a long time. David Moyes has proven himself to be a top quality manager. He is one of the dourest men I've ever seen in my entire life, though. To replace Harry with Moyes, personality-wise, is like, you know, having a chicken vindaloo replaced by a chicken's feather. You know, not as exciting to eat. Sure, it can tickle you every now and then, but it's going to play havoc on your digestive system.
I do like the idea of David Moyes tickling people at Spurs when he arrives.
You know, that is basically what David Moyes will need to do to put a smile on their faces, because, you know,
I can't see that, though.
I can't see him throwing a few jokes around. You know, I can't see him doing a few Harry quips with the media. It'll just be a case of, get out of my face.
You mentioned the positional.
I can't believe you didn't mention my Scottish accent there. You're just letting
that go. I was going to let that go.
Just letting that ride out.
I thought I was going to let that go. Kind guy like that. You mentioned the positional problems that Spurs had in terms of moving Gareth Bale, moving Luka Modric. There have been consistent complaints from Spurs fans that Harry was a little tactically naive at times and made some very strange decisions.
Yeah.
Do you think that contributed to his problems in the end?
Well, there's no question for me that Spurs have been the team to watch in the Premier League for the last 2 years, maybe 2.5 years. The football they've played at times has been stunning. The goals they've scored, sensational. The players they've brought in have come on, as Harry might say, leaps and bounds during that time. With regards to substitutions, I can only really use my experience of watching Harry at West Ham when he was there from, you know, 94 to 2001. My years of a season ticket Upton Park there, all Harry Redknapp years.
And
I can guarantee you, in the 67th minute of every single match, he will make a substitution, irrespective of who's on the bench. The amount of times I saw Kaba Diawara come on for the last 23 minutes of a game, or Titi Camara, you know, irrespective of whether whoever was on the pitch was playing well or not, you know, it's an odd one. Spurs didn't really have quality on the bench, and I think Harry does like to make changes at that moment. I don't think he's underused Roman Pavlyuchenko criminally in the last 2 years. I think he is a great loss to the Premier League, mainly because he hasn't been able to get on the field. He could have been a real player for Spurs. He falls out of favour with players a lot. You know, Jermaine Defoe in for about 10 weeks, doesn't score, then he's out for 10 weeks. Same with Rafael van der Vaart. You know, same with Adebayor towards the end of the season as well. You know, there are some that say he's taken him as far as he can, but I always think the argument's rubbish because, you know, sorry to do this, but where were they when he took over, eh? Where were they?
Yeah, just 2 points. And not just 2 points from 8 games.
But not just positionally, but also as a club. They were a shambles, an absolute shambles when... who was the guy? I forget his name now, the French guy.
Juan de Ramos was in...
Ramos, that was it. And then before that was Yol, before that was Santini?
Yeah.
So, you know, terrible. The way they deal with it as well, Spurs, I've got to say, it's embarrassing. The way they got rid of Martin Yol, now Redknapp as well, you know, just shafting him out at... at some stage or other. I think it's a real shame, but there we are. Good luck, Harry. I'm sure I'll pitch up at West Brom sometime soon.
On the flip side, it's been a good week for Roberto Di Matteo. He's been given a new contract at Chelsea, a bit of a halfway house. They've given him a 2-year deal instead of the 3-year deal he probably wanted and felt he deserved, but it's better than the 1-year deal that was initially reported.
And he's never going to last 3 years. I guarantee you this now. He's going to get the old tin tack in the next 6 months. There is no question about it. He will not last the season. And it'll be the same for the next guy and the next guy. I know we say this a lot. Why isn't there just a rule where every manager gets a 1-year contract? And if they sign a 3-year contract, they have to commit gross negligence to then get fired. Give him a 1-year deal because then you can give him the sack immediately. You know, 2-year deal, I think that's too long. Di Matteo won't last it.
It's a difficult one because if you, I suppose if you stay on Chelsea, if you look at the AVB situation, if that rule had been in place, the problem is the players had undermined him so badly by the time he went that Chelsea would have just had to limp to the end of the season with him in charge.
To be fair, you know, they did win the Champions League, which, you know I'm going to almost belittle this achievement, but that was the worst team ever to win a Champions League. And I've never seen a team so fortuitous to win something in my entire life. And, you know, I was pleased they won it, you know, as an English football fan, but they were an embarrassment to the entire competition. And I, you know, it just goes to show you, they didn't win the league last year. They're in the Champions League. They were the worst team in it and won it. What a joke. But let's move on from that. You know, they won the FA Cup, but they won the FA Cup semi-final against the Tottenham team that was severely depleted going into the game. And they won against the Liverpool team, who are rubbish. So they were very lucky there. You know, I suppose football is built on luck. Reputations are built on luck. But will anyone ever remember that great Chelsea team of 2012? Already just thinking about it makes me want to vomit blood.
But the performances against Barcelona and Bayern Munich, not heroic displays.
I'm not having it. To be honest, I don't even think it was good defending. You know, some of the games you watch where teams defend heroically and they get a draw or win out of it, you think, well, what a great defensive display. Barcelona were, I'm going to use this word, profligate. They were profligate in front of goal.
I knew
it was one of those. I'm thinking about a toothpaste, I think. But anyway, yeah, they were very wasteful. I'm going to go with that, in front of goal. They probably missed a penalty as well at the new camp. They threw it all at Chelsea, and I think they were just off key. The Bayern Munich game, Bayern Munich could play that game 40 times over and win it every single time. They dominated from start to finish. And, you know, end of the day, Didier Drogba is the reason they won the final because of a superb solo individual performance. But he was 20 mil, wasn't he? You know, no cheapskate. And they played rubbish with £20 million players, a £50 million player. Rubbish.
Well, after his rant against Arsenal a few weeks ago, Tom now has ticked Chelsea off the list. We await which London club he'll target.
You wait for the West Ham week. I'll be here all day.
Let's move on to Euro 2012 now. Because of the timing of this podcast, we can't really talk about England.
By which you mean that 5-0 win for England last night. Wasn't it acceptable? Andy Carroll scoring all five.
Could you believe it?
Three bicycle kicks, one off the right leg and one header from the halfway line. I just couldn't believe it.
Extraordinary.
And then when Roy Hodgson danced the Fandango down the touchline with one of the ball boys. It was incredible. Wish he kept his shirt on, but 5-0, who cares?
A disturbing sight it certainly was. Now, so we won't concentrate on England so much, but the Republic of Ireland are out after two games, a 4-0 defeat to Spain, which followed the 3-1 reverse against Croatia. It just shows they've done well to get there, hasn't it?
No, certainly so. But I would say this, right? They lost the first game and they were really, really poor out of the traps.
Yeah.
Both halves. They weren't switched on. Shea Given has been rubbish in two games. He should have saved probably three of the goals he's conceded, two against Croatia and certainly the first against Spain last night. I thought a keeper of his quality, should have got both hands and punched that away. And then I think it was Spain's second where he punches the ball straight back into the path of David Silva as well. So a poor performance from a usually exceptional goalkeeper. But I would say this, Giovanni Trapattoni, what a negative pensioner he is. If you are playing against Spain, right, and you're the Republic of Ireland, you're going to lose this game. You probably lose this game 4-0. You might lose it 8-0, right? Why did he go 4-5-1 with the man up front, Robbie Keane? Zero pace and no ability to hold the ball up. Cox was behind him. Apt name, let's leave it at that. It's just a really, really very, very poor team selection. Shane Long sitting there on the bench going, what have I got to do here?
You did mention Shane Long before the first game, actually, didn't you?
You know, they had Walters, who's a real battering ram player and can hold the ball up. They've got Doyle there, who's made a reputation on being able to hold the ball up in a rubbish team. And he played Robbie Keane.
That's Walters off the list as well. There we go.
Yeah, who else wants it? But it just seemed to me incredibly negative. And I know Spain not only are the best team in the world, but also they were exceptional in the game against Ireland. Let's not discount that. And also, they would have probably won that game anyway. But show some endeavour. Show some fighting quality. You know, I'm going with it. If it was an Irish manager in charge, I think they'd have shown a lot more bottle.
Just moving on to some of the other teams we've seen. Who's impressed you so far? Has there been a standout team you've seen and thought they look like winners to me?
I thought the French looked good. Obviously, we need to assess them again this evening, but I thought they were very impressive against England. And that was a good defensive display from England in that game, because I think France would have torn most teams apart the way they performed. Impressed with Croatia. I thought they were really good against Ireland, and I thought impressive in their second game as well. They've got some real talent in that squad. I think they'll get through. I'd like to see more of Luka Modric. I think he's been the disappointment so far. Beyond that, everyone seems quite average. Portugal don't seem to be able to defend whatsoever. Cristiano Ronaldo missing one-on-ones with goalkeepers. Never seen anything like that before in my entire life. No one particularly stand out. I don't think Spain have really hit the heights. So they were good against Ireland, but
not impressed with Germany yet. Two wins look good.
Yeah, the Germans, I don't like to say how good I think they are, but the Germans are going to win the competition. I think that's fairly clear to all. They are the best team in it. The only way they could not make it is if they come up against Spain and Spain outpass them like they did at the last World Cup.
That's the iceberg on the horizon for them, I think, the Spanish, because the one area I think Germany are vulnerable is at centre-back. Not because of the individual players. Hummels and Badstuber are very good players. As a pair, they've not played together a lot. I worry about Badstuber positionally. And I think Spain could cause them quite a few problems. But I think of the teams I've seen so far, Germany, I think, are certainly the most fluid. You don't associate kind of attacking skill and fluidity with the Germans a lot of the time. But this team does look capable of really good things attacking-wise.
And I think all of us, as neutral football fans, if you take England out of the equation, would like to see that as a final, a semi-final, a major game in this competition. Because we saw them a couple of years ago and Spain just passed Germany to death. Yeah. Like they just couldn't get the ball. But this German team are the best counter-attacking team you're ever going to see. And, you know, as we've seen several times over, Spain press high up the pitch, try and win the ball back. If they don't win the ball back in the first phase of play, Germany will destroy them.
Yeah.
They'll absolutely destroy them. And, you know, in Mario Gomez, you know, he won't run more than 2 yards, but in that 2 yards, he scored three goals and looks, you know, so sharp. He's looked so sharp all year, apart from the Champions League final. Again, how lucky were Chelsea? We'll move on. But, I feel like it's going to be Germany or Spain. Love to see England get out of the group. Obviously, we don't know how they did, but Andy Carroll, hat-trick.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say.
Fandango. Okay, we'll finish up with rugby today. England's due to play South Africa in the second test on Saturday afternoon. There have been a few changes to the lineup. One of them has seen the return of Toby Flood to the fly half position ahead of Owen Farrell. And he's been talking to Nick Heath from the RFU podcast.
So Toby, first start under Stuart Lancaster. You said during the Six Nations that you didn't really know the systems and therefore didn't feel it was right for you to start. But now do you feel that your time is right for you to start in 10 for England?
Having spent the latter part of the Six Nations, this tour now, it certainly feels a little bit more, I'm certainly more at ease with what's going on, which is great.
What's been told to you by the manager about why you've been picked to start this game over and over?
Nothing too in depth, really. I think that they just wanted to change things up. I think they want to give guys opportunities, which is great for me in terms of getting on the field. So I don't think you read too much into what is said. You just keep your head down and get on with it.
Niggling injuries at the end of the season, but before that you passed the form 10 in the Premiership, leading Leicester to 6 bonus points victories in a row. You're really pleased to get your form back during that period.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that people talk about form a huge amount. I was in a side that was going really well, so it's obviously pretty easy to play, and you just keep your head down and you crack on and you do what you've got to do, you do your job. So you know, it's one of those mystical things that everyone sort of talks about, whether it's there or not, and no one really, to be honest, sort of knows about it. You make a couple of mistakes in a game where you win by 50 points and no one ever talks about it. So it's always ironic, but at the same time it was great to be involved in that Leicester side. We're going really well, obviously coming from 11th in the Premiership when we got back, and the hard work by everyone in the squad to get to that semi-final and then final, but to fall short last year, it'll hurt. But you know, I missed out, which was disappointing, but certainly there were some good bits in that last 6 games.
Ben Young's in England shirt again. He was a big part as well of marching those 6 bonus point wins and your form at the end of the season.
Yeah, Ben's an outstanding athlete. He understands the game really well. He's developing all the time as a player, and I think sometimes you sort of forget that he's 23, 24 years old. So he'll be chomping at the bit really to make a big impression this weekend. He's happy to be back in the shirt. Obviously lost it during the Six Nations, so I suppose it's a credit to him for how he was playing those last few games, and he's had the opportunity. For me, he's an outstanding player, but there's huge competitions all over the squad now. You look at the 3 scrum halves you've got there, and they're all fighting and clawing at each other to get a 9 chip.
Communication and its therefore effect on decision making is vitally important. You must feel confident going into this game with Ben inside you just there, you know, because you're Leicester partnership.
Yeah, it helps, certainly. It gives you that familiarity that you sort of used to playing with one another. Obviously, you understand Ben's strength and Manny's strength, and sort of I've played enough times with Ashley and Foden to know about him. So really, it should make it quite interesting in terms of hopefully we'll be able to create a strong bond and a dynamic and go out there and play some good stuff. I think we have to go and play there. We have to go and give them as many shocks as they hopefully can feel and try and cause as many problems as we can.
Manny's playing 12, obviously, on Saturday. Has he played there for Leicester before? We haven't really seen him there before in an England shirt.
Yeah, he's played a couple of times for Leicester. It sort of was his preferred position, really. And then he went to 13, he was sort of 12, wing, messed around. So he's played there a fair bit. He'll be fine. He'll take it to it, like duck with the water. I think the last time he might have played 12 was against South Africa for Leicester, really, when they came touring 2 years ago. So he knows what to expect. And to have someone with that physical attribute, to have someone who understands the game as well as he does, is willing to play and willing to run around, is fantastic for us. So hopefully he'll come good.
Using his top carrier in the first test, I think with 12, is the idea to get him involved more off first phase play and really get him across that game line as much as possible?
I think, you know, you want to keep the rabbit in the hat, but certainly we'll use him or not use him as best we can. You have to remember that not only is he a good carrier, but he's also a very good dummy line runner. And you know, you can manipulate him and manipulate defences around him. So hopefully we can play around with him and Jonathan in the centre there and try and release our back three. So we will not use him just as a primary ball carrier. I think you've got to be smart in the way you play things and the way you use him.
One of England's problems was getting out of their own half effectively or efficiently during the first test. Is that your first priority before any attacking ambitions?
Yeah, you have to deal with that as best you can. You have to create a situation where you're not getting into too much trouble, you're not causing yourselves problems. Yeah, the altitude's important in terms of the ball travels a little bit further, so goal kicks and making poor mistakes within your sort of 50-yard area is going to be punished. But we need to make sure that we don't give them any momentum, and that's what they want. They want you to kick forward, they want to squeeze you, and then when you have kicked forward, you get punished for it, and pretty much both their 2 tries came from that situation. So it's paramount that we get used to that and we deal with that, and if we can get it out of our own half and kick long to them or kick out to them or kick to compete, whichever way we decide to do it, as long as we're getting out there efficiently, then that's a good thing.
Just finally, how do you view your role now as the eldest statesman in the England squad at a relatively young age still, because you're inevitably the most capped person here?
Yeah, I don't think I'm that old, and I don't think I'm that much of an elder statesman yet.
Statesman's a nice phrase there.
Yeah, not so sure. It does make me feel pretty dated. It's great to be, obviously, you know, of the honour of the most caps, but at the same time, I think what you've got on this side is a lot of young guys coming in and holding their hand up, so it's difficult for me in terms of not really having that responsibility or perceived to have that responsibility, should I say. It's very much a collective squad and the guys all talk together, and it's a good situation for us to be.
Okay, that's all for this week from Tom and myself. It's goodbye for now.